The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Positively Pro-Life aims to bring you inspirational stories, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm Bonnie Finnerty, Education Director at the Federation, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director. Happy New Year, Maria.
Happy New Year, Bonnie. So good to be with you today.
Yes, good to be with you. Now, medicine and ethics seem to be at a crossroads today more than ever. On today's show, we have a truly impressive guest who we are so excited to introduce to our listeners. Dr. Christine Cerucci is a doctor who lives right here in our state of Pennsylvania, and she is a member of the organization APLOG, the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. I'm so eager to hear her pro-life perspective and to learn more about APLOG's mission. In addition, Maria will provide us with her always informative insight, and this time it will be as to why Roe must go. But as always, we'll start off with a good dose of pro-life inspiration. And what a story of hope we have today. Just before Christmas, Cleveland's Children's Clinic in Ohio issued a press release about a surgery that took place last May. A little child underwent major surgery, the removal of a tumor that was attached to his heart. Now, what makes this surgery on a child so unique, however, is that the child was just 26 weeks old, a fetus still growing in his mother's belly. At 26 weeks gestation, a preborn child is just about the size of a large zucchini and weighs just under 2 pounds. And yet, a multidisciplinary team of Cleveland Clinic doctors and nurses performed a rare and complex life-saving 3.5-hour fetal surgery that saved this baby's life. Little Ryan Harrison Drinion was diagnosed before birth with intrapericardial teratoma with fetal hydrops, or fluid accumulation, that would eventually lead to fetal heart failure if not corrected. According to the clinic's press release, surgeons successfully removed the malignant tumor, which had been compressing the left side of the fetus's heart and impairing circulation, leading to fluid accumulation around the heart and other organs of the fetus. Following the operation, the mother and fetus recovered well with no complications and no sign of tumor recurrence during prenatal checkups. Now, this is only the second known time that this surgery was successfully performed on a fetus. And to hear the details of it is truly fascinating. So again, from their press release, once the mother was anesthetized with an approach to provide the safest environment for the fetal heart surgery to be successful, a cesarean section-like incision was made to expose the mother's uterus. Ultrasound was used to carefully locate the placenta and the fetus and the best location for entry. The uterus was then opened up about 12 centimeters and the arms of the fetus were brought out to expose the chest. An IV line in a blood vessel of the fetus's right arm was made to deliver fluids and medications as needed. And then the chest and the pericardium, the membrane enclosing the heart, was opened and the tumor removed from the beating heart. Now, the doctor performing the surgery said that as soon as the tumor was removed, the compression of the left atrium disappeared and there was a nice blood flow and everything was returning back to normal. The chest of the preborn child was closed and he was positioned back into the uterus, which was then closed, followed by his mother's abdomen. And 10 weeks later, on July 13th, at 36 weeks and 2 days, Rylan was delivered by cesarean section. And today, both mother and baby are doing well. Modern medicine and scientific advancements are ever evolving, and some medical conditions can be corrected or alleviated in utero. We know so much more today about fetal development than we ever did 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And we know preborn babies feel pain earlier than we once thought. We know that they are highly complex little human beings. And we also know that this is exactly how each one of us began. We know that every life is unique and has inherent worth. And every life, whatever the threat to it, every life is worth saving. And it is that core belief that keeps us in the pro-life movement inspired and motivated. Maria.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. Nearly a half century after it went into effect, the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court ruling known as Roe versus Wade is showing its age. In the advent of 4D ultrasound, in utero surgeries, and premier care for premature infants, Roe seems like a relic from the past. Roe legalized abortion in all 50 states, depriving individual citizens through their duly elected representatives from having a say in abortion policy. It seems to represent a type of legal elitism, which seems so out of step in our populist age. Chances are great that the seven male justices who decided Roe never foresaw what Roe has wrought, nearly 63 million preborn babies killed in the past 49 years. Countless mothers have been left to grieve children lost to abortion. Their sobering testimonies can be found at the Silent No More Awareness campaign online at www.silentnomoreawareness.org. In addition to that are the many men who regret their lost fatherhood as a result of legalized abortion. These men often suffer in silence, unable to grieve openly about the children they have lost. The U.S. Supreme Court now has an opportunity to overturn Roe with a Mississippi case known as Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. The case involves a 15-week ban on abortion, but it is more than that. It is a direct challenge to Roe. This case represents the opportunity of a lifetime to rid the nation of the disastrous Roe decision and return abortion policy to the individual states to decide. Such a scenario is long overdue. Premature babies are being saved at ever earlier stages of development, making the old viability standard passé. Overturning Roe would be a signal that the law is catching up with science and medical advancements. The late-term abortions, which are now legal, seem especially cruel when premature infants are surviving as early as 21 and 22 weeks gestation. Now, ultrasound has illuminated the humanity of the preborn child. People throughout the country have now grown up with ultrasound images posted on their refrigerators, signaling the arrival of a new brother or sister. It is difficult to argue against the enchanting image of a child in utero, ready to make an appearance in the world. For many, an ultrasound was their very first portrait, pointed to with pride by their captivated parents. Yet in Pennsylvania alone, more than 32,000 abortions occur in a given year. That's the equivalent of the population of an entire city. If only those babies had been given a chance to be born, they would be populating our schools and playing fields, basketball courts and playgrounds. But their voices and their laughter have been forever silenced by abortion. Roe was fatally flawed to begin with. Even some abortion advocates have recognized that fact. Discarding Roe would mean not only the restoration of states' rights in abortion policy, but a rebirth of sanity in American jurisprudence. 2022 should be the year when Roe is forced to go. Bonnie?
Thank you so much, Maria. And it's my pleasure at this time to introduce our guest. Dr. Christina Cerucci is a board-certified OBGYN and longtime member of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She earned a degree in mechanical engineering from Virginia Tech and worked in the engineering field for 7 years before pursuing a medical career. She received her medical degree from Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia and completed her OBGYN residency at the Medical College of Virginia. Dr. Cerucci then joined a private OBGYN practice in Pittsburgh, where she worked for 20 years. She has volunteered her medical skills in various third world countries in Africa and Asia, and has made multiple trips to volunteer at Memorial Christian Hospital in Bangladesh. Dr. Cerucci has a heart for the life of the unborn and joined the board of APLOG in 2021. Welcome, Dr. Cerucci.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you with us today. What is the mission of your association of pro-life OBGYNs?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. APLOG, which is American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, it's the largest organization of pro-life OBGYNs in the world. It's a network of pro-life physicians, medical practitioners who all share the view that life begins at conception and that we have two patients, the mother and her baby, and we must take care of those two patients. We believe that killing the second patient is not an option. APLOG's mission is to equip its members to, one of the main missions is it's an educational mission to provide the members with evidence-based research and information in the pro-life, you know, with a pro-life view. So there is a lot of information. The website just has, we have committee opinions, practice guidelines. There's a journal that it is put out. There's a conference every year. So as you know, as a pro-life OBGYN, it's easy to feel you're in the minority and there's so much opposition out there. So for one, it's great to have a network of other people who share those views and are on kind of the front lines taking care of the woman and her baby. But just the educational resources, you know, that APLOG supplies, again, we look to science and to support the position. And a lot of APLOG's members are called upon to speak in the public square, to speak, you know, APLOG is a nonprofit organization, but our members are often called on to speak either to the media or to legislators and to give a professional pro-life perspective on those items. And APLOG equips its members to do those kind of things.
I do have to say there is a wealth of information on your website, so I would encourage everyone to check that out, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But I really enjoyed just looking at all the different sorts of information, the videos, the resources, the latest news, your press releases, lots of great information there. So how does your organization, APLOG, differ from the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, ACOG, that some people might be familiar with? How do you differ with them on life issues?
That is a great question, because APLOG and ACOG are night and day. So ACOG is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And it was founded in 1951 as a source of objective medical expertise. And what has happened over the years, ACOG has changed. You know, as an organization like ACOG should be neutral on abortion, in my opinion. They're not. They are very pro abortion. They have taken instead of just being an educational, you know, source of medical expertise, ACOG has become very pro-abortion in its advocacy. So ACOG really does not represent a large majority of its members. If you go to the ACOG website, you'll see much on pro-abortion advocacy. Yet ACOG has never surveyed its members. about their position on abortion, yet claims to represent them. You know, 85 to 90% of OBGYN physicians do not perform abortion. So ACOG doesn't represent most of its members. There is a website, www.notmyacog, that you can look at there, because unfortunately, instead of being neutral about these issues, ACOG has taken a very pro-abortion stance.
Now, how did you personally come to develop your pro-life views?
Thank you for asking that. So I became a Christian at a young age. When I was 13, I committed my life to the Lord Jesus Christ. So I guess in a sense, I've always been pro-life, but when you're young, you don't necessarily think about those things. What I found, though, was as I learned, especially in my medical education and training, all that I learned confirmed those pro-life views. You know, the Bible says that we were formed in our mother's womb, that God created us. The Bible says, supports the position that life begins at conception. And as I studied in medical school and training, and all I have seen as an OBGYN supports that. You know, at fertilization, that the baby's 23 pairs of chromosomes are there, all the baby's DNA, the baby's hair, the hair color, eyes, sex, all of that is already determined. So, you know, I would say that my faith has given me the pro-life perspective, but that science and medicine have served to confirm that.
Doctor, what are the dangers of abortion for women?
Well, that is a great question, because I think the narrative out there is that abortion is safe. So I want to look at this from three areas: the short-term dangers, the long-term dangers, and then kind of what I call the unspoken dangers. So, you know, most abortions in the United States are performed in the first trimester. Most of those are surgical, although increasingly, probably over 40% are probably at this time are medication abortions. A surgical abortion is basically a D&E procedure. Well, that carries risks of short-term risks. We're talking infection, bleeding, injury to the uterus or cervix, perforation of the uterus can occur. Now, those risks are unlikely. But now we have medication abortion, which was approved in the US in 2000. And that is touted as so safe. You will find the statement several places that medication abortion at home is safer than Tylenol. Well, that is not true. I've done research on medication abortion, and it is not. And medication abortion actually has four times the risk of complications as surgical abortion. The most common would be bleeding, excessive bleeding, possibly needing transfusion, infection. A good proportion of women, several percent, have that don't pass all the tissue and actually end up needing a surgical completion anyway. There have been 24 deaths in the United States from medication abortion. And the other thing when we talk about complications is, you know, I've spent a lot of time delving into these studies, and they are often done by pro-abortion researchers. And often the conclusion is, oh, well, look at this. This is safe. Complications are low. But in most cases, these researchers are reporting only the complications they are aware of. If a woman goes to the emergency room because of bleeding and ends up getting a transfusion or a D&C or a hysterectomy, and the abortion provider isn't aware of that, then they don't report that. And they're not, you know, in a lot of these studies, there's a very high percentage, or significant percentage, I should say, frequently 15% or more, where they don't know what happened to the woman. So there's a lot that we don't know, because the the data is not followed. And we also know, you know, that a lot of times the abortion provider doesn't take care of their own complications. As a physician, if I do a procedure or surgery and there's a complication, those happen. That's, you know, that is my responsibility to follow the woman through and take care of whatever's going on. I was involved in a paper we published last year where less than 40% of the abortion providers manage their own complications. So I think there's a lot we don't know about complications. As far as long-term complications, some of those are the increase in preterm birth, also increased risk of suicide, substance abuse, depression, mortality, sometimes breast cancer. The other risk, however, is what I will call the unspoken risk. And I think there is an internal trauma to the woman that she carries, the woman who's had an abortion. In my experience as an obstetrician gynecologist, women rarely refer to their abortion in neutral or positive terms. I, you know, always take a what we call an obstetric history, asking, you know, about how many pregnancies, how many live births, how many miscarriages, abortions. And when the woman, you know, gives information about her abortion, almost without fail, her countenance and her changes, and you can tell that there is a just an ongoing burden from that. So that's been my consistent experience as an obstetrician gynecologist. So I would say with complications, you know, we know it ends the life of the child, but it also has effects on the woman.
Doctor, how have medical advancements changed the conversation surrounding abortion since Roe versus Wade was decided in 1973?
Yes, great question. And, you know, Maria talked about that. I would agree, medicine has changed significantly. Now, I would propose the issue is still the same. Life begins at conception. It's killing a human life. But, you know, in the oral arguments for the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Healthcare, two of the Supreme Court justices referred to no change as Chief Justice Elena Kagan says, not much has changed since Roe versus Casey. And I would respectfully disagree. A lot has changed. And as Maria, you mentioned, the viability. You know, when Roe was passed, probably 28 weeks, we're talking about when a baby, how far in gestation a baby can survive outside the womb with supportive measures, of course. When I was in residency training in the 90s, 24, 26 weeks, you know, you weren't sure the baby would make it. And now the viability is probably 22 weeks. There was even a baby at 21 weeks, 2 days that has lived outside the womb. So that has changed. Another area where we've seen a lot of change over the decades is, as you said, ultrasound, much more definition. We have better ultrasounds. We can see more. So that has changed. You know, I consistently see a beating heart at 6 weeks. Well, 6 weeks, the way we talk about 6 weeks is what we call gestational age, but really that's 4 weeks after conception. So we're saying that at 4 weeks, we see a heart. At 2 weeks, there's a starts of the developing circulation. And I think the other main thing that I would like to mention is the fetal pain. And it was Chief Justice Sonia Sotomayor who said, well, you know, most physicians don't think fetal pain exists before 24, 25 weeks. I would respectfully disagree with that. We used to think that in order to feel pain, a fetus had to have a functioning cerebral cortex, which would mean probably no pain until 24 weeks or so. But recent studies show that that is probably not the case, that cortical activity may not be necessary. And between 16 to 20 weeks, the thalamus is connected to the pain receptors. And that may be the source of sensation of pain. Interestingly, Dr. Derbyshire, who's pro-choice and, you know, published studies that fetuses don't feel pain. One of his studies in 2000, as recently as 2006, fetuses don't feel pain. Yet last, not last year, 2020, Derbyshire and one of his colleagues, Bachman, published a paper where he retracted his views. And he said, it's unproven that fetuses do not feel pain until they have a functioning cortex. And they may feel pain as early as 12 weeks. So, you know, that's very interesting that he was such a proponent on one end and now has changed his views. So as I said before, science only and medicine only confirm the pro-life view. Everything we learn confirms that. So
in our short time that we have left, can you address the issue of conscience protections and how medical professionals who are being coerced into doing procedures? Is there a way that APLOG responds to these situations or advocates for them?
Yeah, that is a great question. I have always said that if I would lose my license if I had to do an abortion, then I guess I would lose my license. Fortunately, I've never been faced in that particular situation. APLOG is a member of the Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine, Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, which is several organizations. It's APLOG, the Catholic Medical Association, the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, the Coptic Medical Association, and the American College of Pediatricians. And our purpose of that organization is to uphold the views of Hippocratic medicine, the original Hippocratic oath, so we would not kill the unborn. And, you know, rights of conscience, that's a crucial part of the advocacy that APLOG does on behalf of pro-life physicians.
And doctor, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so very much for all that precious information. Remember, there's always a reason to choose life.
Thank you.